All right, everyone, you're listening to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., and it is time for our relationships, and we're taking a look at the power of touch as the Love Unlimited Orchestra. Take us through it with the power of love. All right, so we're taking a look at that connection between touch and the brain, and I said we would start where I left off. Here we go. Touching and being touched. The giving of touch and the receiving of touch. Touching and being touched activate particular areas of our brains. And as a result, touching and being touched influence our thought processes, our reactions, and our physiological responses. Here's an example. We talk about a study that reports that brain scans have revealed that affective touch activates the orbital frontal cortex. That's a brain region that's associated with learning and decision making, as well as with emotional and social behaviors. The orbital frontal cortex, a part of the brain that's associated with learning and decision-making, but is also connected with emotional and social behaviors. It is affected by affective touch. Certain experiments have suggested that romantic kissing is an important tool, particularly for women, when it comes to choosing a partner. Now get this, why would you say, some experiments suggest that romantic kissing is an important tool, particularly for women. Romantic kissing now. They say it's important. Some are suggesting it's important because it helps people choose a partner. How and why? Because the personalized chemical cocktail found in an individual's saliva conveys important information to the brain about their physiological compatibility. How many of you say, okay, I can see that, I buy that? How many of you say, really? Kissing, romantic kissing, the exchange of personalized chemicals found in each individual's saliva. And those chemicals convey important information to the brain about the physiological compatibility of those two people who are doing the kissing. You say, nah, no way. Do you say, yeah, it makes sense? All right. Let's move through this. Let's move on. Touch can be reassuring and calming for a person in distress, since it can communicate an offer of support and empathy. There was a study done in Sweden that found that embracing children and patting children who are experiencing distress has a soothing effect on them. If they're in distress, embracing the children and patting the children has a soothing effect. In such a circumstance, the study authors explain, the interaction involves the adult signaling that they're available to offer soothing contact, followed by the child's acknowledgement of this invitation and positive response to it. Let's start with an infant. How many of you have, that touch, the child's in distress, that touch, calming and soothing for the child? Did any of you think about infants, toddlers? How about toddlers? Let's say the child is 2 or 3 years old. They're running in the house, take a spill, and they get up crying. Because let's say this isn't just an issue of, them trying to get attention. Let's say that they really did hurt themselves. She hurt herself. He hurt himself. No serious injuries, but some pain was involved. And maybe they show you where they skinned their elbow a little bit. They're crying. And you look at that elbow, and sure enough, some skin has come off. It's nothing major, but, you know, you can see how it would have the child crying, a little bit distressed. And so you, oh, baby, I'm so sorry that happened. And you gently pull the child to you, and you begin to hug the child. And within seconds, the child is feeling better and quite likely crying less. Maybe not as loud. The tears aren't flowing as much. Your touch was so soothing and so affirming. I want you to think about what happened beyond or beneath the skin, beneath the bone, beneath the flesh, beneath the body, inside the body. Not only did your touch, your physical body, send information to the child's physical body that you are there for the child. The child is worthy of the attention necessary in helping the child overcome this moment of distress. And you can get to the business of cleaning up later. You know, get your Neosporin, or whatever you're going to use to, you know, tend to the wound. You can do that later. But for right now, you're just simply trying to comfort the child. And the child is responding. You hug, and the child either hugs back or just kind of falls into you and lets you hug, and they just receive all the comfort that you're offering. Don't think that just because they don't put their arms back around you that they're not responding. Pay attention to everything that's going on. Yeah, if they're just allowing themselves to just fall into your body, just be there and just rest on you, they're responding. And they're saying, your touch is reaffirming. Your touch is comforting me. Your touch is helping me calm down. Your touch is doing me a lot of good. I appreciate this hug. So don't think just about, you know, inappropriate touch. We all know that there is inappropriate touch. There are times that touch may not be appropriate. We understand that. But we're just focusing now on that touch that is good for people. Helpful. The power of touch. So, you have this adult, or even a teenager, or even a preteen, hugging this toddler and letting them know, hey, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And they're proving it by affirming the child is okay as is, even with the scarred arm. The interaction and coordination involved in that scenario, adult or older person comforting the child, the interaction and coordination allow the child in distress to regain a sense of security and reassurance. That's what we were talking about. Security and reassurance. The scar might still be there. It hadn't even, a Band-Aid with the smiley face hadn't been put on it yet. But the child feels much better spiritually, emotionally, and physically. More in just a few.